Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chase the Goal podcast, your destination for all things lacrosse. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me is Jack Piattelli. He's feeling real good right about now, aren't you, Jack?
Yeah, I am. Thanks. Really, I'm feeling good. I got a couple of special guys in the studio today, but I just wanted to talk one thing about one thing, and that is I ran into a guy up in upstate New York and who runs a youth program, and he was telling me that they have players in the kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade, all the way up to sixth grade, and they don't put a long pole in any of their players' hands until possibly the seventh grade, which I think is a great concept because you see more players at the younger ages trying to maneuver that long pole, and one, they can't move with it, right? They can't move their feet. Two, they can't handle the ball. They can't pick up a ground ball. They're always trail checking, right? Because they could get that stick in front of them and try and defend. So I think it's a great concept. And I know Massachusetts, I really don't know what the rule is now, but I see more kids at the younger ages with the long pole. And you talk to any top player, top coach, and it's a lot easier to move from a short stick to a big stick, a long pole, in terms of skill development. You should learn how to catch and throw with the short stick and then move into a long pole. It's very difficult from a long pole to a short stick. Do you see a lot of long pole defensemen playing in the NLL?
No.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
Because they have a tough time adjusting from the long to the short.
I will say, it's a nice differentiator if you really want it, right? That's what I did. I was a long pole in high school. I couldn't catch and throw because I was a long pole because you didn't have to back in the 90s.
Right.
You just had to hit people and, like, get the ball up, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, you have to clear it, too. I'm like, I have to what? I got to run? No. I'm playing defense so I can hit people and, like, maybe get a little contact down there. But totally true. I do think the game has changed a little bit where LSMs now are almost better ball handlers than – pretty much any other generation of people that have used a long pole ever. Like the current crop of LSMs.
Oh, no question about it. But
it's like crazy.
But a number of them started with the short stick, though.
Right.
I would like to know
I think at the youth level, you absolutely have to play shorty.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We talked about this on a previous podcast where if you're not learning how to play lacrosse by playing midi first, like there's no, like, if you're six and you're like, I'm going to be a goalie, I'm worried about you.
Yeah.
I'm worried about your mindset.
Well, one of our guests, Bo Koloski, has a son, Grant Koloski, who probably, I think when he got out of his mother's womb, he wanted to be a goalie in lacrosse. But we have two guests today, Bo Koloski, who's one of my great coaches, coaches our 26 team, and been a great advisor for the program for a number of years. And his oldest son, Mason, is going to Hood next year. I'd like to talk a little bit about that too, because he really did a great job researching a number of the schools that he wanted to attend and found a little school down in Maryland who an up-and-coming program, and there's a program for everybody. And Ryan Murphy, head of our operations at Piattelli Lacrosse, is here in studio today, excited. He's going to tell us a little bit about what he does and his role. He's got a big job, and he's doing a nice job for us.
Well, you let Irish guys in your program now?
It wasn't easy.
Springfield College.
That's it. And his dad is a bartender at Jimmy's restaurant in Mansfield, Papa Murph. He's a great bartender. So anybody wants to go to Jimmy's restaurant, ask for Murph.
No one is ever short of a plug on this podcast. Nobody.
What Jack won't tell you is the three best coaches in his program all played together at Merrimack, though.
That's right. Bo Koloski played at Merrimack. Pete Davis played at Merrimack. And
John Waite.
I almost forgot John Waite played at Merrimack as well.
So before we started, you guys basically said that you're kind of the newest hire, and you've been with the program the longest.
One of the longest, yeah. Yeah. I think Keith's probably been with you longer, right?
Yeah.
And Bussy.
Yeah.
But we started in third grade. We had about 80 kids up on top of the hill up at where King Philip played football and ran Saturday clinics for about a month and a half, 2 months, and then took a team out of that and went to Newport and played in a tournament summer of third grade. And we've been going ever since. We still get three kids from that original team, the OGs, we call them. And then we've steadily added kids over the next couple of years to the point where we're freshmen in high school now. Most of the kids have made varsity rosters, which is great, which is kind of proof of concept of what we're doing from a technical and skills standpoint. And they're ready to kind of show themselves off this summer.
Well, let's kind of, I want to drill down on that, is the curriculum that you guys have. And I know it's like a weird word to say when you're talking about training athletes, right? But there really has to be a plan. If you don't have a plan, you're just rolling the ball out and maybe picking some drills, right? Like, there has to be philosophy. There has to be core tenets. There has to be, for lack of a better term, rules. So how did that develop with you guys, and where does it start, right, with the youngest kids? Where does it start, and what's one of the first things that you teach them?
How to pick up a ground ball.
Yeah.
Right? I say to the kids today, ground balls win games.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be the best team in the tournament that's picking up ground balls. And then passing and catching, you have to be able to pass and catch both hands. You get to shoot overhand. You get to know where to shoot. So it's really fundamental driven. The first, up until even last year, we were more concerned about kind of developing the kids' skills and understanding where they are. And now we've kind of moved into more of the IQ of the game and how do you substitute and, you know, what are the little technical things that make you a better player that you're going to be able to get recruited off of? But it's really, if you don't have the fundamentals and you haven't taught the fundamentals early on, none of that matters because none of it's going
to
work.
Right. What are some of the drills that you use to teach those things? Like, what's the best? Give me your best ground ball drill. Give me your best spatial awareness drill. And give me your best shooting drill.
So I'll let these guys talk too, but I'll give the best ground ball drill is, and our kids hate it, and we do it pretty much every practice, but everyone picks up two ground balls, and they have to have two balls in their stick. They scoop one, roll in the other, and they're just chasing a ground ball for a minute. And it's tiring. It forces you to get down, but it forces you to kind of keep those ground balls going. But we're an excellent ground ball team. We win the overwhelming majority of our ground ball battles because of that, because we put such an emphasis on it.
Yeah, and to speak more to the curriculum piece, we really empower our coaches, where we have tons of shared drill banks, and we give a base outline for a practice, but the coach, like Bo, he knows his team better than I do. I might know some of the kids, but I'm not with them all the time. So we give kind of a base outline, and then it's up to the coach. We hire them to coach, so they go out and execute as that best suits their team. Myself, I had the third, fourth graders for this winter. They must have got a ton better with the coaching. But just like Bo said, it's catching, throwing, just repetitions over and over, constantly switching hands. And an hour and a half of that for 8 weeks in a row is definitely beneficial, and it's great to see how much better the kids get throughout each week.
Yeah, we make it fun.
Yeah.
It's got to be fun, too. The drills are fun. We have contests for the little guys and even some of the other guys, shooting drills, so on and so forth. I think we have progression drills, too, where you might be in a drill for 15 minutes. You start with a pass down, pick down, then it's a pass down, pick down, and then you hit the pick guy and different progressions as you go along and try and get always. I'm always thinking of how many touches can you get each player get in a particular drill, and that's so important because time is very important. We don't want to waste any time. We have an hour and a half every Sunday in the winter time to make these players better, and we ask them. I go, you're here to get better. You got to get better every single day. If you're here, you want to get better, and let's focus on how many touches you can get in this particular skill, and quality touches, not quantity. It's quality as well.
I think you guys are missing that I'm just trying to steal your drills. Like, I need more shooting drills, and I need more spatial awareness drills, okay? I got a lot of new kids. I need help.
We have banks of drills we can pass along to you. And
I will take them.
And I think one of the best drills is start with a ground ball. Scoop a ground ball, then take a shot. Or roll and take a shot. Or split and take a shot. Try and use different skill sets to, because in your game situation, yeah, right, you might have to pick up a ground ball and move it quickly, or you might get pressured one way or another. You pick up a ground ball, then you get a roll and take right. a shot or make a pass. I consider a pass a shot. Same thing, right? If you can pick up a ground ball, you're going to be in a position to either pass the ball or shoot the ball, one or the other. You got to get rid of it. So we try and include a number of skill sets in a number of drills, so not just working on shooting over the top, or we don't do any shooting behind the back, particularly in our skill sets, but we'll do it sometimes for fun.
Right. Well, as we get to high school, get a little more specialized at our trainings where it's more run like a college practice where you start with your passing, then you get into 45 minutes of positional, whether that's defense, attack, goalies, face-offs, those sort of things. Again, we're still building skill, but getting a little more specialized to their position.
I think I'm also interested, when do you teach more advanced movements, right? So I think the first dodge everyone learns, it used to be face dodge. Now I think it's just split because it's easier for kids to understand, right? When do you turn that into, oh, I'm going to split into a roll? When do you learn to chain dodges? When do you go to more advanced things?
No, I think you start from the beginning. Yeah. When they're young. I mean, learn how to touch. Pick up a ground ball, catch and throw, and then let's teach them a roll dodge. Let's teach them a split dodge. Let's teach them how to shoot on the run at a young age. I mean, I found as a coach, the more you throw at them, at a younger age, in terms of skill sets, the more they're going to actually take in. If you just focus on ground balls or just focus on shooting, throw it all at them and see what sticks.
Yeah, I think you want to make them uncomfortable. Not in a, I can't do this sort of sense, but kind of right. Push them out of their comfort zone at every opportunity you can get. So much of this game at the high level is really complex problem solving and quick decision making and reaction. So the sooner you can get the kids used to that, the better off you're going to be as you advance into high school.
Yeah. How did you and your son come to choose Hood? Because we had Coach Barber on the podcast, incredible dude. I had a lot in common with him. I don't know if you've listened to that interview. It's very, very intense. He's an intense guy. He made a choice.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So we got lucky with Mason because he understood what he wanted to study in school. And kind of the size of the school that he wanted to go to. So that took that list of potential colleges from here to here. Mm-hmm. He wanted to play lacrosse, and that took that list from here to there. And we got to a short list of about five or six schools and visited each of them, did a lot of campus tours. My wife and Mason spent a lot of time in Philadelphia and Maryland and New Jersey and New York, outside of New England, you know, the schools that you typically know, over the last two summers. And We went down to Hood for a prospect day, and he really liked the program, liked the coach. Campus felt like home. Ironically, it was the first school that offered him a spot, and it just kind of went from there. That kind of became the basis of what you were choosing against. Do you like this better mm-hmm. than that? And at the end of the day, it was a lot about the program, academic program, right? Because it doesn't say lacrosse on your degree
right.
when you graduate, so you need to know that that's the right academic program for your kid. God forbid he gets hurt or the coach leaves or whatever. And then secondary was the athletic side of it. And the Brad's a great guy. Like you say, he's pretty intense. But watched a couple of his practices, and they're very similar to the way that we run practices as a program. So a lot of it felt right.
I'd like to give kudos to Bo's son, Mason, because he really did his homework. Went to a number of prospect days. And he went to prospect days where they were taking place at the actual school so he could see the campus, meet the coach, play for the coach at that showcase and get a feel for everything in terms of making a decision on what school you want to go to. But he really also found Hood the academic major that he wants to study as well.
Right, right. Yeah, he's going to do clinical psych, so they have a 4+1 program, which is...
Oh. Where else has that?
Clark
University. the only university in the United States where Sigmund Freud spoke. It's fine. It's a whole thing. No, that's great. It's great.
Yeah.
It's you always have to pick the right fit. And one of the things that I really like about your program in general, just in my experience with it and with Jack, is there's no stigma of being a D2 or D3 player. I think that's super important because, as Jack and I say all the time in this podcast, we're D3 guys.
Right.
We love the sport. Like, you can still have... You can have an even better experience at Division II and Division III.
It's at the end of the day, it's what you want to get out of the program. Are you looking for the ability to play 4 years, right? Would you rather play at a high level at a D1 and maybe not step on the field to your junior year? But a lot of that needs to get vetted out with you and your family and your kids. And Jack's great about reaching out to schools if he thinks they're a fit. He's also really good at saying, you know what, this isn't a good fit.
Yeah.
So kind of delivering that hard truth to kids is tough sometimes, but I think it's at the end of the day, I think it's better off for someone to kind of realize where it makes the most sense and kind of embrace that and go, as opposed to trying to force yourself into a program.
Bo, talk a little bit about, maybe this is like, Dave, take this out, but I'm asking you a question without asking the question, because I want you to talk about how Mason's experience at Piatelli Lacrosse was a great fit, because he came in not a great player, good athlete. We worked on his footwork, just, and now how it's all transpired. And sure. He started on a single A team and went to.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dave, you can cut that all out. And just, I want you to just bring it up like there was no question, right?
Yeah. So, in Mason's case, he played 1 year at the AA level in, I think it was seventh grade, and wasn't in love with lacrosse. He was in love with hockey at the time. So, kind of decided to take a year off a club and then came back and played for a couple more years on the single A team. Mm-hmm. And then last year kind of did the work that he needed to do to kind of get better from a footwork standpoint, from a strength standpoint, and just kind of a overall lax IQ standpoint. And he actually fell in love with the game more than he did hockey at the end of the day. Played on the double A team last year, and it was a strong, steady progression, but it was all driven by him. We never forced him to go back and play. We never told him that you got to make the double A team. We just really wanted him to kind of get to a point where he knew he was happy and was kind of had the ability to play at the next level if he wanted to.
Right. Ryan, let's talk a little bit more about your job here. You got to kind of keep these dudes in line. And you're a younger guy. We just had the Campbells on in the previous edition of the podcast, and they're kind of the old guard. They made a great point, which is, don't you want someone that's super experienced teaching your kid what to do? You don't really want a guy showing up in flip-flops and a backwards hat, right? Not that you're in flip-flops and a backwards hat right now. You look very presentable. But how do you kind of mesh with these guys, and what's your role with Piatelli?
So my role with Piatelli is on the operations side, making sure that at every practice, tournament, there's balls, there's two coaches for each team, the fields are booked, it's doing what they're supposed to do. And then it's really nice where I've gotten to know Kevin and Keith outside before I started working for Piatelli and Jack. Just being in the lacrosse community, Springfield College graduate, definitely helps with Jack here. But they're, again, awesome guys, and they set the example for the younger coaches. If you go to a Western Mass training and see the head coach of Longmeadow there, he has that level of respect from everybody out there. Same thing with Central. You come to our Central training, we have Kyle Hart, head coach of Wheaton, Bo, the head coach of Bishop Feehan, Tom Sheeran, and a lot of guys that people know and respect in the community.
So in addition to just having, do you do travel and things like that? Like how much?
So it is great. I know, again, Jack mentions that our program is very much like a family. We have a ton of great parents. We're involved in booking the tournaments, but it's really nice where every team has a mom or a dad that helps have the team stay at the same hotel, plan logistics, team dinners. Before tournaments, I'm on every team's group chat, and I can see that, and it makes for kind of a better overall experience. We're not just going somewhere for the weekend, you play your five games and go home. You're going somewhere, you're staying in the hotel with the team, everybody's there, you go to a team dinner. It makes for an overall better experience than, again, just showing up and playing your games.
How do you pick the tournaments that you play in?
So I think we're a little different than most programs where we send our coaches for the fall, each team goes to two tournaments. We send them four or five that we recommend, that we say, here's ones we know your team's a good fit for, and we let them pick. Being we have so many teams and two coaches assigned to each team, we want to make sure they can attend that event. If the head coach can't go, we don't want them going to that tournament just because we're going to send all of our teams. So we treat each team specifically to their needs and their competitive level.
Yeah, we don't want to send a team to a tournament where they're going to win by 10 goals, and we don't want to send them to a tournament where we're going to lose by 10 goals. We want to send them to a tournament where they're going to be able to compete. And it's not to us, it's not about, obviously it's nice to get the wins for the kids, the coaches and the parents, but it's about competing and getting better. And we want to be able to send all of our teams to tournaments where they are in the right brackets, it's right tournaments, and they can compete. And that's really what what we look to do is to get a tournament where it's really a good fit for everybody involved, the parents, the kids, and have a good experience and come out of every tournament as a better team.
I just want to know like what the process is and how many you have to go through, right? Like, because I think that it's just a huge swath of now that I'm covering it after not covering this side of lacrosse for a very long time, it is overwhelming how many places to go and how many options there are. So I can't imagine running a club team where you have to pick which ones fit your play style and your players the best.
I mean, there's a lot. There's the amount of tournaments that pop up every year new is astounding, right? And everyone says they got the best coaches and the best experience. So I think we kind of rely a lot on experience and contacts that we have. We know where, at the high school level, we know where the coaches are going to be. We know where you're going to see the highest concentration of them. They're actually at the fields. I look at a tournament like NXT in the fall, and Mason got recruited out of a fall event at NXT. But that fall of his junior year, he got more kind of outreach than any tournament that he had ever done. So I think it's really kind of focusing on where do we, as Jack said, for the younger kids, how do we bracket them in the right spot? And as you get older, how do we put them in front of get them the most exposure? Again, where they're not in an 18-1 game or a 19-1 game, you don't want close competitive games. So when the coaches are watching, they get a sense of how you can port yourself on and off the field, which is important as well.
Right.
For me, another thing is being operations is the tournament run well?
Right.
Is it a tournament company that has field maps? They got parking signs? Because I don't want six coaches calling me, hey, I'm at the field, there's nobody here, or hey, I need this, and where it's out of my control. We want to make sure we sign up and we go to the tournament, everything's run smoothly. There's refs, there's trainers, there's parking signs, all those little things that make for a great day, where if it's those stuff is out of our control, if it doesn't go well, we might take the backlash for going to that event.
Who else that helps? People that want to cover your tournament. If your tournament is set up poorly, I don't want to go back.
Right.
And you know what? If it's set up well, I'm going to be there every year. It's on the calendar already. I think that's kind of one of the things that's why it's interesting to talk about operations, because as someone that has done something similar to that, not totally as involved as what you do, that is one of the most important things. When I was at Inside Lacrosse, we had our own events and we would go and we would evaluate guys. And I'm like, there's not the right kids are not on this roster. Like, it also goes the other way too. If you're not giving a roster that has the right information on it, and that means you don't have a good operations person. But if you do, you're in that next tier.
Well, you also get to know the people who run the tournaments, and being around the game a long time, and our coaches, we've had good experiences and bad experiences at different tournaments. But getting to know the people that run the tournaments and what our expectations are. Lacrosse, we've supported their tournament for 15 years. They do a very good job with their legacy tournament. They have a lot of coaches there. Prime time, we go to a lot of their events. They do a very good job of organizing the tournament, making sure the teams are in the right brackets. And the tournaments don't want any blowouts either. It's not good for the tournament to line up one team versus another where they're going to win by 20 goals. Tomahawks run a good tournament in the fall, a youth tournament that we attend. So we like to support the other club programs as well in the region. And we know what to expect from them. And then we always take in consideration expense, too, to the parents. We don't want to go to Maryland three times or down to Virginia. And we always have that in consideration because it costs a lot of money to play. So we're trying to keep the expenses down as much as possible for the parents when they travel. And we keep that in mind. And that's why we only go to three tournaments in the summertime.
How do you manage parent expectations in the different age groups? Like how much of that is part of the curriculum that you have already?
It's tough, right? I think I have two kids in the program, so I can speak as a parent as well as a coach, but I think you instinctively think that your kid's better than he possibly is, right? at every level. I think Jack, you still have that, right? With Ryan and John, right? So how do you temper that with kind of the where they're at in their journey through this, right? In third grade, I told the parents that we're running the Boston Marathon and we're literally in Hopkinton. Mm-hmm. I think we're closer to Heartbreak Hill now. But each year, it gets a little bit more challenging for the kids, right? Because they've got to start to say, all right, do I want to play lacrosse in college? Do I want to play hockey in college? And so now you're getting to an age where you have to pick a sport, mm-hmm. right? Where a lot of our kids, every single one of our kids is a multi-sport athlete, and they're very good at their other sports. That's a lot of the reason why we're a good team. So it's really communication and kind of understanding where you are at that point in time. How do you continue to improve as a lacrosse player and as a teammate and a person? I've always said that on top of just the lacrosse skills, we're trying to create people that I want to hire when they get out of college, mm-hmm. right? So good teammates, complex problem solving, quick thinking, just good to be around people. So there's a lot of that goes into it too, because that's what the college coaches are looking for. What especially going through this process was, the first thing they ask you is what are your grades? And the second thing they ask you is what kind of teammate are you? Mm-hmm. You know, I think they can assume you how to play lacrosse. So it's really kind of setting the tone with each individual parent and each individual kid so they have their own kind of pathway. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all mentality or mindset that works.
Yeah, to jump in, too, I think making sure you don't promise the world.
Right.
Make sure that you keep your promises you make, whether that's what's included in the program or what the team tournaments are going to go to, is being clear what's included in the program. And Jack said it before, we're not a recruiting service. We're here to help our players, but, you know, we're
your development service.
Yes.
We're here to develop you.
Stick to what your principles are. We're here to develop and train lacrosse players and make them into good players and men.
We want them at the end of the day to come walk away, love Piattelli lacrosse, love playing lacrosse, and maybe have an opportunity to play in college. I'll be totally honest with you, all three of my kids, I had no expectations, and I would tell my kids all the time, that was when you could get recruited, committed in the eighth grade, I say, don't listen to the noise outside. Don't listen to the noise. Focus on your studies. I remember talking to my son, Brian, and telling him all these kids were getting committed in the eighth grade. I said, Brian, just focus on your studies. Focus on you. And you're going to end up in a good place. And I honestly didn't promote my kids. I didn't tell everybody how great they were or this, that, and the other thing. We just focused on what we controlled. And all three of my kids, Endicott and two at Cornell, ended up at three very good places. So I think parents have great expectations for their kids. And you got to ask the kid, what are your own expectations of yourself?
Right.
Right? What do you want to do? Where do you want to end up? What do you want to do with your life? Right? Is lacrosse a part of it? And that's so important. I know that I went to Springfield, I wanted to play lacrosse. I didn't go to the study. I wanted to play lacrosse.
Right.
But I ended up doing a little study, and I was able to graduate in time. So that's, parents have to take a couple of steps back and let the kid be themselves and have fun. And if the kid really wants to do it, like Mason Koloski, they'll find a place where they can get a good education and have a wonderful experience on the lacrosse field.
One of the interesting things that I find when you talk about your club program as opposed to other things we talk about on the podcast is you don't mind being positive about other club teams. And I think that there is this like perception that everyone's a rival of everyone else because, oh, we're trying to build this whole thing and everyone's trying to build and there's only so many players, but there are so many players you're pulling guys from Rhode Island, right? I mean, you're not just Western Mass or Central Mass. Like you have a lot of players that will just come to you because you're almost choosing the club program now is like choosing a college for a lot of these kids.
Yeah, very similar.
So I think the way that you're able to offer all these different things is beneficial, right?
Yeah, and I respect the other programs. I know a number of the guys that run the programs all over the country, and I know the challenges that they have are the same as ours, but we just got to focus on what we do, and we focus on our coaches and our players, and that's the most important thing. We want to find good people, and good kids and good parents, and we've been very blessed that way.
And one of the things you guys added too is the Stallions, the box program, right? Can you talk a little bit more about how that came about?
Yeah, so this is our first year doing the Stallions box program. We have a few of Jack's former Blazers teammates running it with Bruce Chanichuk and Dave Desko. It was a great first year. We had four teams, two at high school and two youth. They each went to three tournaments. Our first tournament was paired with the Albany Firewolves game, so it was really cool for the kids to go play in the tournament on Saturday, watch the Firewolves at night, and then play one or two games the next day. But box as a whole, I think, is great for development, to play in such a small space, and especially at sixth grade and below, the ball never going out of bounds. I mean, you miss a, how many times in a field, U11, U13 game, a kid misses a pass or rolls out of bounds, the other team gets it. It's more engaging, where everyone has to play a role. Everybody's got to get involved.
And the other thing we've done this year is we've added red team. And we have red teams, green teams, and white teams at every level. But that's between Eastern Mass and Western Mass. So our Pioneer is Western Mass, and our Eastern Mass is Central. So at the high school level, we take the best players from Central and Western Mass and create a red team, and the next team will be green, and the next team will be white, which for the better players that want to compete at higher competitive tournaments, they play on the red team. So something we've done in the past and something we're going to continue to do at the high school level, because not every kid wants to play at the most competitive tournaments. It just takes a special kid. Right?
Yeah.
And then we've joined forces with the Clams, the Tomahawks, and the Twisters, where for those elite players who really want to take their game and compete at the national level, we had tryouts and we had players make the freshman, sophomore, and junior Blazer team, which made up of the Twisters, Tomahawks, and Clams, and play down in Florida and did quite well. So again, we're looking to give our players more opportunities to be seen and to develop, especially at the high school level, and we'll maintain our teams at the youth level the way they are.
Yeah, we saw that in going back to box. It was nice to see me and Jack coached the 7th and 8th grade team, and there was a good mix between our Central players and our Western Mass, where the teams practice in Marlboro, so it's not too far for both regions, but it was cool to see the kids to get to know each other. And we do a lot of that at the youth level. We have a big team camp every year at Springfield College, and it brings all of our, we do 3 hours with all of our youth, 3 hours with all of our high school, and again, really good team building and making sure players from both regions are familiar with each other. So there's kind of a sense of family and in some grades a sense of rivalry between teams and coaches.
And guess where our practice location and facility is in Western Mass?
Where's that?
Come on, one guess.
Springfield College.
Springfield College. All of our teams practice at Springfield College, and a number of our teams practice at Dean College in Franklin for Central. And we have a great facility in Rentham called, what's it called?
The Rice Complex.
The Rice Complex, yeah. They have five beautiful grass fields, so we've got some great facilities and great relationships with the facilities that we lease.
How many kids are in the program total? Estimate.
Last summer we had 550 players in the program, and we'll be close to about that this coming summer as well. The numbers are a little bit less in the fall because not everybody wants to play in the fall. Those numbers continue to grow, and we have a lot of interest in the Stallions program going forward as well.
Let me ask you kind of not a controversial question, but I want to get your take on it because we talk about it all the time. The difference between prep and public school kids in your program is what?
There isn't one.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
We have, so on our roster, we have kids that are playing in the ISL. We have kids that are playing NAPSAC. We have kids that are playing Rhode Island Interscholastic, MIAA. They have a common thread to them. They're the most athletic, aggressive, smartest lacrosse players probably in their class on their roster. So I think we don't go out to say we're only going to recruit ISL kids. We're more concerned about putting the right team together and keeping that team together and letting them develop with each other as they move throughout the program.
I think you can take a look at it too, like colleges, right? Do they recruit more private school kids than they do public school kids? Probably not. I think they want to get the best kids, the right fit, yeah. Right? And that's what we're looking for, the kids that are highly motivated and passionate and love the game, and they want to continue to develop.
And like any team and club, it's per grade sometimes or per team, where if a group of kids go to one school, they all want to play in the summer together. So that's where you see it. We see it a lot more out west, where some of the high school programs aren't as built up. If you want a better athletic and academic experience, you might look to go to, there's a little more options out in Western Mass.
Yeah, it's Western Mass, I've learned, is very similar to Central New Hampshire where I coach. Like the not the level, but like the attitude and the type of player that you produce is usually like really athletic and wants to play in college, need a little bit more refinement, and that's kind of what the club atmosphere allows for a lot of these kids.
And that's what's great too, where again it allows to have your double A and single A, so there is room for both. In ours, it's great where they can train regionally. So you have the kid that needs a little more refined development, but then you have someone else that is going to a Division I school, and they're at the same winter training. They're at the same fall training.
Yeah, that's what's great about our program is all the kids train the same. And when we talk about training, it's really skills and drills and team concepts and lacrosse IQ. So if you're an A or single A, you'll train together, which is great. So you get to know everybody, and no one's better than anybody. It's just you're all there for the same reason, is to have a good experience, have some fun, and develop.
And peer leadership, you guys mentioned in the last episode. Definitely a lot of that going on.
So just to kind of go back to your original question, the other thing I think is nice too is that we've got some kids that are on Division II, Division III, MIA teams that might look at kids at an ISL school and say, well, can I hang with these kids?
Right.
And so they can go out and hang with these kids and say, you know what? That's a huge confidence builder for those kids. Mm-hmm. And it's also good for the kids that maybe think I'm in the ISL and I'm better than you to kind of say, maybe I'm not, right? So
So
it's a good leveler as well as that. I'm a huge fan of having a broad mix of kids, especially as we go into high school. My son's playing at Fian, and both of my kids are, and their scrimmage is varying today, and he's going to play against one of his teammates today. So it's good to see that at different levels and just kind of have that commonality there.
How far does a player travel to play for you guys? Where is the farthest they travel from?
The farthest on my roster is I have a kid in Newport, and then there's a kid in, or there's a group of kids in Westboro.
And then out west, probably is West Hartford, because again, it's about an hour and a half probably to Springfield.
I know you guys had a goalie from New York.
Yeah, we had a kid who traveled down from Albany that played for us.
Yeah. How does that happen? Because I know like a lot of the club teams are regional, not by necessarily choice, but like by convenience, right? Like that's how it works. Like,
yeah, well, that player actually had a cousin who played for Central and spoke highly of the program and came to tryouts, made a team, and he traveled an hour and a half to practice every Tuesday and Thursday, came to all the winter trainings, and ended up, he's going to Franklin Pierce.
Nice.
I think the majority of kids though on our team, if you stuck a pin in Wrentham, it's probably a 30-mile circle.
Okay.
Max.
Yeah.
If I'm a parent listening to this, what is the thing you want me to know about Piatelli lacrosse from each one of your perspectives? From each one of your perspectives. You want to go first? You can go first.
No. Well,
the biggest thing that drew me to the program was the fact that we kept the teams together. They were when you made a team at tryouts, you knew what team you were going to be on for the next year. And there was that sort of consistency with both your teammates and your coach, so you knew moving through the program what you were going to get in that next summer and the summer after that and the summer after that. So that for me, I think, is a huge difference maker for what we do and how we do it.
Yeah, I'm going to expand off the team, where you make your team in the fall. And then, like both said, as coaches, I can't tell you how many college coaches we have on staff, head high school coaches. We did a free youth clinic, and most of the college coaches and high school coaches helping us run the clinic were all Piatelli coaches. We didn't really have to go outside our umbrella, because, again, the biggest thing is these kids, we want to make them better lacrosse players and better men. So to have good staff and a good that in place is good.
We have great resources in terms of the relationships we've built over the years. The college coaches, high school coaches, they respect what we're doing. They know these kids are coached well. One of the compliments I get a number of times is, I really like the way your team plays. They play a team game. They compete every time they go out on the field. And that's really what we're all about, is we want to teach the kids how to play the team game and come away feeling good about where they're at, whether they win or lose.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to do it for us. It was great having you guys in. Thank you so much for coming.
You got to tell them it all starts with Jack Piatelli, though.
I knew that was coming.
Great leader. Jack's a great leader.
Jack's a great guy. One day he'll let me coach his program, maybe way longer down the road.
Anytime. Anytime.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chisholm Gold Podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.